In Alabama, T.K. Thorne is an author and a retired captain of the Birmingham Police. Her latest book, which delves behind the scenes of the city's racial turmoil during the pivotal 1960s, is titled Behind the Magic Curtain: Secrets, Spies, and Unsung White Allies of Birmingham's Civil Rights Days, published by New South Books. I spoke with T.K. earlier this summer. T.K., thanks for joining us.
It's my pleasure. Thank you for having me.
When you were approached to write this book, you had to be convinced. Tell me more about that.
Yeah, I was just sitting around minding my own business and found myself in the middle of an email conversation with people I didn't know. I tried to tell them that I was there by mistake, but they insisted, no, wasn't a mistake. And it was four elderly, and I say that they were in their 80s. And some were approaching 90s. Gentlemen that I didn't know, but they invited me to come up to an office in a prominent law firm. If they had asked me to go to a bar to meet them, this book would not have happened. But I figured that was pretty safe. So I went, and they told me that they wanted to write about stories that had not been told. I thought they had made the mistake and picked me because they thought I was a civil rights expert, which I was not, at least not at the time.
They turned to you, though, because you wrote Last Chance for Justice about the investigation into the bombing of the 16th Street Baptist Church in 1963.
Well, that's what I thought, and that's the logical conclusion. But that really wasn't the book. It was another book I had written about Noah's Wife, which was a novel. A historical novel. And I was as taken aback as you were. And I said, why that book? You know, what's the connection? And one of the gentlemen said, well, I just read Noah's Wife, and I figured if anybody could make me believe that this was the real story about what had happened thousands of years ago, that was the person to write this book.
Well, let's talk about some of the stories in this book. Most of them are about members of Birmingham's Jewish community during the civil rights movement of the 50s and the 60s. I'm thinking first of Abe Berkowitz, who confronted none other than Bull Connor himself.
Yes, he did. He was a bold man, and he spoke his mind, said what he thought. One of my favorite stories about Abe Berkowitz. In 1962, near the end of the year, the courts had decided that Birmingham's parks and recreation facilities had to be integrated, or at least desegregated. And Bull Connor and his fellow commissioners had decided they would just close the park, pour cement in the golf holes, and close the park or sell them in order to keep from desegregating. So Abe Berkowitz wrote a letter to the newspaper and said, I prefer to keep the parks and sell Bull Connor.
And another person whose story you tell in the book is Betty Loeb.
Yes. Betty was very outspoken. In fact, she made it onto the Ku Klux Klan's watch list for a dangerous person because of her activities.
And those activities were?
Well, one thing she did, she had a radio show, and so she was able to counter some of the vitriol that was being spewed by Klan activists. And in fact, one of them, whose name was Asa Carter, had his own radio show at the time. She was able to gather enough forces against him and what he was saying that shut down his station. But she also did a lot of things that were not on the public radar. She went with other women, black women, to visit the schools in Birmingham, particularly the black schools, which were poor and didn't have equipment, and try to meet their needs as best they could. She was part of a group of integrated women, black and white, who met regularly from the late 1950s into the 60s and on.
And two other people you write about in the book, Carl Friedman and Jack E. Held, both attorneys.
Yes, my favorite story about him is, and Carl was one of the gentlemen who asked me to write this book, and it was his law office at Permute that where I met them for the first time. And he told me to call him Uncle Bubba. He was Uncle Bubba to the whole community. But one of the stories that my favorite story about him goes, you have to kind of jump back to a person who was his law partner for most of their lives. But before that, J. Mason Davis was a young black man who had just graduated from a law school in New York. And the reason he was up in New York is that Alabama, of course, the University of Alabama had a law school, and there were other law schools in Alabama, but they didn't want black people to go to them. So in order to keep from being sued, they would pay for these black people to go out of state to get their education. And that's why J. Mason Davis was in New York. When he came back, on his first day, he walked into a fairly hostile courtroom setting. And, you know, I'm sure that people were ignoring him or not happy that he was there. But he recognized two Jewish men that he had known, and or his family had known, and one of them was Jack Held and the other was Carl Friedman. And so he went and sat with them. They explained the court proceedings to him, and it became kind of a little ritual between them. The place to go in downtown Birmingham for the attorneys to eat lunch was a Chinese restaurant, but they serve whites only, which is pretty ironic. But Jack Held and Carl Friedman and J. Mason Davis would go have lunch together in the basement of the courthouse out of the vending machines. And that started a lifelong friendship between all three of them. In fact, I went to lunch with them. They were still going to lunch in Carl's late 80s and early 90s.
Another person in the group that approached you to write this book, Tom Lankford, a reporter with the Birmingham News, who covered law enforcement in the 1960s. His notes are woven throughout your book. Talk more about what you learned from him.
Well, Tom was really the reason that I got excited about writing this book, because I really wasn't. But he asked me if he could send me the notes to a story about a breakfast he had with his boss. It was the famous Vincent Townsend of the Birmingham News. And I said, sure, I didn't want to be rude, so I said, sure, you can. And he sent it to me, and oh man, I was hooked, because Tom, who is not Jewish, but Tom was kind of behind the scenes for every really significant civil rights event, documented everything with photographs, and he wrote stories. He was embedded with the police department. He was assigned the police department as his reporter's beat, but he admitted himself, he crossed the line of being a reporter and sort of became an embedded police officer. And he was actually the impetus to a lot of secret tape recordings that was going on by law enforcement, both the city and the county, throughout this time period.
And talk about your own background in law enforcement with the Birmingham Police and how it helped shape this book.
Well, I can't say that I always wanted to be a police officer, because that's not true, but I sort of accidentally found it. And that's another story, but I decided to try it, and so I went to the police academy, and I spent a couple of decades and worked my way up to captain before I retired. But having that background allowed me to understand a lot of Tom's stories in particular about the police department and being in the police department and understanding their mindset and the policies that they worked under was just helpful. And I think in making it more realistic.
And your experience with law enforcement through the Birmingham Police, that came after this era, which you write about. There are lessons from what you write about and from your own experience that inform this book. What lessons do you think this book offers now?
It's not a simple question, and there's not a simple answer. And there's several lessons that I felt like I learned in researching and writing this book. One of the most significant ones, and it sounds obvious, but it really wasn't obvious until I got into it, and that is the cost of standing up is not something that I really ever thought about. And these white people who stood up were very, very isolated. And that was one of the, there are many ironies that I uncovered, but one of them was the fact that I never thought about, which is, and this is not to take one bit away from the Black community and the protesters and everything that they fought for and did and the bravery that they had. At the end of the day, they went home to their communities and they had support. Their family and their community is a support. The white people who stood up were ostracized and isolated. To me, that really, really came home as to how hard it was to do that. And the lesson, I guess, is that you need to be willing to pay that price. It's worth it, but you know, you need to understand that what activists feel today, people have gone through that before in a much harsher time. So that's kind of the main lesson. But there's all kinds of things that have stirred up my thoughts about where we are and how we got here in terms of race relations and mistakes I think we may have made and how we did that.
All right. TK, thanks so much.
Thank you very much.